OpenServe is more than just SA's largest telecoms infrastructure provider. It's the answer to new ways of doing business, a connection to cutting-edge technology and infinite possibilities. A connection to tomorrow. Connect with us at openserve.co.za.
This episode of the Tech Central podcast is brought to you by Pinnacle, Africa's top ICT distribution business, delivering the exceptional every time. I'm Duncan MacLeod, and you're listening to the Tech Central podcast. I'm at the offices of Switch Telecom in Bryanston today to talk to the CEO, Gregory Massel. Greg, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
We're going to talk about ICASA's new draft call termination regulations, and I know you're not entirely pleased with them. But before we get into that discussion, I haven't had a chance to sit down with you before to chat about Switchtel and to find out a bit more about the business. How long has it been around for, and what is the main market you play in? Voice termination.
We are a voice provider, specifically in the fixed market, but using VoIP technology. We've been around since 2008, and we provide services to various different customer sizes, from the individual home user right up to enterprise. We also have wholesale channels. So the sort of services we provide are fixed line replacement services, hosted switchboard services, conferencing, and various ancillary services to those.
Okay, and we were just chatting before we started recording. You have quite a long career history in the telecommunications and internet service provision market in South Africa, and you've been involved in a number of ISPs over the years. Tell us a bit about that.
So I started in the internet service provider industry. I had my own internet service provider in the days of dial-up. Sold that. I've worked for various different internet service providers. I used to be very involved with the Internet Service Providers Association. For 7 years, I was joint chairperson of ISPA. So I've been very, very involved. I think that includes the competition case that ISPA brought against Telkom. And then subsequent to that, I moved into the telecom space, specifically around VoIP technology. And so for the past decade or so, I've been working in the telecom space.
Okay. So you've seen it all, I guess. I mean, especially as joint chairman of the Internet Service Providers Association. When were you joint chairman? Over which period?
In trying to work out the times, it was it must be from around 2001, 2002 onwards, thereabouts.
Okay, so you saw the whole liberalization and deregulation of the industry through that turbulent period of the first decade of the century.
Yes, yeah. I mean, I've lived through from the early days when Telkom challenged internet service providers and said they had a monopoly on the internet.
I remember that.
Yes, I've lived through that. That was actually the time at which I had my dial-up internet service provider way back then. So, and then we've seen through the various new technologies that have come in and anti-competitive action that led into ADSL when it first launched, and Telkom trying to abuse a monopoly there, as well as in various other different markets. So we've seen quite a lot, and I think times have changed quite a bit. The market has liberalized quite a lot, but in many ways it's still got a long way to go.
Yeah. Well, I've just come from Pretoria, where I attended a press conference hosted by the Telkom Group CEO, Sipho Maseko. And you spoke about how Telkom abused its monopoly back in the bad old days. Sipho Maseko giving an impassioned plea to the regulator to say that, in fact, the real problem in this industry today is not Telkom, but Vodacom and MTN, which have come to dominate the mobile services market. And he was saying that the latest set of draft regulations from ICASA on call termination rates, which is a technical term for interconnection, or the fees that the operators are allowed to charge each other to carry calls between their networks, is skewed in favor of the big mobile operators, and that it's the small guys who are going to get hurt, particularly by this new set of proposed regulations that ICASA has on the table. And he was particularly upset about the fixed termination rate coming down. I think he was arguing that fixed and mobile have essentially converged, and that that the rates should be equal. Not there shouldn't be this big difference between the two of them. Now, you guys are a meaningful player in the voice over IP services market. You've had a look at these draft regulations of ECASAs, and you're also not happy with them. What's your fundamental criticism of what ECASA is doing here?
Well, setting aside Telkom's view on it, I think the single biggest issue with them is that, whether intentionally or unintentionally, they seem to steal from the smallest guys, steal from the poor, and give to the rich. I think Telkom have maybe alluded to that, and they're saying that it benefits Vodacom and MTN at the expense of Telkom. But it goes well beyond that. And it really could be devastating for many of the new entrants to the market. And a lot of those entrants are actually in the fixed space, or as it's referred to, but this includes VoIP. And in fact, that's where there's probably the most competition, because it's not a case of, say, four entrants in the market. They're close on 100 in that space. And they're relatively new. We've been around 10 years, but there are a lot of players that have been around significantly less than that. And in that fixed market, there are a lot of players with 2% or less market share. In some cases, you're measuring it in fractions of a percent. And they haven't yet achieved the sort of scale that they can operate in very low termination rates. And they're just starting to get going and to really make a difference in this market, to provide the types of services that people are looking for in the fixed space, to deploy services in rural areas, because let's not forget, a lot of copper has been stolen and Telkom haven't really been able to replace services in a lot of the more rural areas, and then also to reduce costs for business in the more urban areas. They're deploying new technology. I think the hosted telephony switchboard space is really being pushed by new entrants in the market. And these regulations are going to have a devastating effect on these new entrants to the market. I think that it could render a number of them unfeasible. And certainly those that have started only within the past few years could face closure.
What's the reason for this? I mean, what is it in the regulations that is so untenable?
So I think the biggest thing we're seeing is a complete turnaround from the strategy that ECASA went on from 2010 to 2016. So in 2010, there seemed to be an acknowledgement that there was some level of convergence between fixed and mobile technologies and between the markets. And so when we started in 2010, prior to that, the ratio of the mobile termination rate versus the fixed termination rate was about 4.5 times as high. And over the space of 8 years, that's come down to 1.3 times as much. So there was an engagement process that happened in 2010 and a certain amount of consensus, and ECASA built that into the strategy and they've implemented that subsidization by the fixed market of the mobile market that happened in the early days and that was necessary in the early days to help the mobile networks when they were starting up really deploy infrastructure across the country. That is no longer required, and so that level of subsidization has come down. What we're seeing in this draft regulation is a complete reversal of that. So the proposal is to go up from the current level back to the level of fixed mobile subsidization that we had in March 2010. And that's really backwards. There's no reason for the fixed market to be subsidizing the mobile, because the market dynamics have changed. The mobile networks have coverage across the entire country. And the fixed market is actually not as economically viable as it was back then. One of the things that's really hit it quite hard is cable theft. And I think people often look to the cost of the fixed and they look to the international market and compare it. It's not always comparable. The other thing is that in the fixed space, the technology that has driven it for so many years, copper, has really become obsolete. And there's an understanding that if the fixed market is going to move forward, that technology has to be replaced with fiber. So you can no longer look at this as a market where all the infrastructure already exists and it's just being leveraged. It's going to be looked at as one where new infrastructure is being built.
So do you think that there's perhaps an argument to be made that the ratio should in fact be the other way around, that the termination on fixed should be higher than the termination on mobile?
Well, I mean, I think that we're getting close to that point. I've never condoned a difference in the two, to be frank. Mm-hmm. From the comment process that led up to the 2010 regulation, and in every subsequent process that ICASA has had, we've always recommended a move towards convergence. And part of that is because, irrespective of the technology used, the services deployed by the operators tend to overlap to some extent. So, for example, mobile operators like MTN and Vodacom offer business switchboard services using mobile technology. Mm. Some VoIP service providers are deploying mobile-like services using VoIP over LTE and similar technologies. So one can take these sort of services and deliver them over various different networks. And the risk that you run is that if you have very different rates, and particularly if you grant the mobile operators a much higher termination rate, is that they'd start delivering the types of services the fixed network's offering and can do it at a much more competitive cost because they're getting a subsidy from us. And there's no doubt that they're doing this. The services are there. Services like Vodacom OneNet Express, MTN's similar services. So it's a huge risk in having a differential. And while there is an argument to say that perhaps this should reverse and the fixed market should have a slightly higher termination rate, I would err with caution and say that actually the strategy that we proposed from before 2010 and that ICASA has by and large been sticking to up until fairly recently of converging the rates between the two markets is probably the better one. And it's probably the more honest one in terms of the long term and one that will allow everyone to compete fairly.
So is there any indication why ICASA has changed tack here, why they were on a particular road where these rates were being narrowed and now they're diverging again with these draft regulations? Any indication at all in anything you've seen as to why they may have done this?
There hasn't been a clear indication. Just reading from draft regulations and briefing notes that have come out previously, it would appear that they haven't reviewed the markets at all. So they haven't looked at whether things have changed, whether technologies have changed, whether the types of services being offered have changed.
But how can they regulate a market if they haven't done that?
Well, they're claiming that they did that in 2010.
But the market's changed substantially since 2010, right?
Well, this is part of our argument. Mm-hmm. But based on that, they've then called in international consultants to try and model the costs of a hypothetical efficient operator. And this is what regulators do often if they find difficulty in working out the true costs of network operators, particularly if the large operators don't want to share their financial data, or if they feel they're not being honest or transparent about that financial data, then they model based on a theoretical efficient operator. And I think the problem is that consultants are using models and data that comes from various international examples. So the methodology might be appropriate for Europe. And I think we're seeing that in terms of the figures they've come out with, because if we look at their target costs for the next 3 years, they seem remarkably similar to what the UK market has aimed for. But the big difference is that the UK is a fairly densely populated country. It's one of the world's strongest financial markets, strong economy, and technologically quite far ahead. By comparison to South Africa, I don't think it's fair. If you're deploying infrastructure over South Africa, you've got vast tracts of rural land. If you want to deploy services across the entire country, the economies of scale in Dar, for example, are certainly not comparable to London or Manchester. So I think that the issue is that the models that they're using, the figures they've come up with, are really too biased towards international markets. And they haven't taken a step back and looked at the South African market. And I think perhaps what's happened here is they also haven't gone back and reviewed what they did in 2010 and the feedback that licensees submitted both in 2010 and 2014, and said, are we actually on track with our own strategy? Are we harmonizing our strategy this time round with the feedback we've had over the long term? I think that's quite important, because with these sorts of processes, there's a lot of smoke and mirrors, and licensees are often accused when they give input of changing their tack to whatever suits them and whatever suits their pockets. But if you look at the input over a period of a decade, and you see where there's consistency, and you see where there's consistency across various different licensees, then you very quickly start to see what is true and what's alarmist.
Mm. Out of interest, I mean, some commentators have suggested that voice termination call regulations are not as important as they once were, because we've obviously seen the rise of data in the mix. I think most of the big operators now are generating at least 50% of their revenue from data rather than voice. How important are the call termination rates as a regulatory function in a telecommunications market going forward?
Well, they're very important, but I think a key thing here is not to try and compare them against data. There's a really, really key need in this country at the moment to bring data costs down. And I think that certainly has more focus for the public at the moment, and with good reason. Call termination rates have been regulated. They have been for 8 years now. So we've seen most of the benefit of that process. Data hasn't been. And I think on that basis, one shouldn't rush to compare them. The data rates have to come down. Data rates are not being inflated, however, by interconnection costs. So,
because both parties pay.
Well, in the voice space, both parties pay, and data peering is generally free of charge. I say generally because there are exceptions, and sometimes large players leverage their position to try and force smaller players to peer. But it is, by and large, a cost-free interconnection model. And so the cost of data is influenced more by how the operators price their own services and their deployment of infrastructure, and issues like frequency. Now, those are very important issues and issues that have to be addressed, and they should not be detracted from in any way by voice processes. At the same time, the voice process shouldn't be detracted away from purely because of the need for data prices to come down. The voice termination rates, call termination rates, have to be regulated, because this historic model that's existed for many, many decades across the world, where interconnection rates are actually charged between operators, is not going away. And it's one that, if you don't regulate, as we see these rates inflate rapidly, and it has a hugely harmful effect in terms of retail call tariffs going up. Now, you know, people say, well, it has been regulated, why do we need to continue regulating it? A little known fact, I think, is that a year ago, 2017, ICASA ceased regulating the call termination rate in respect of calls that have originated outside of Africa but terminating inside South Africa. And this happened fairly quietly, because for the average person in South Africa, it didn't really affect them, didn't affect what they were paying. It only maybe affected them insofar as family overseas were now having to pay extraordinary prices to call them. But the interesting thing is that those international call termination rates, where it's completely at the discretion of operators, tend to vary at the moment from between 1 and 2 rand a minute, which puts them at roughly 10 times as much as the regulated rate. And this gives us insight as to what would happen if ICASA ceased regulating termination rates. So I think it's important that this process continues and that regulation stays. That being said, there's a big difference between regulating rates and further trying to bring them down. And I think that if we want to reduce them further, we've got to understand the reasons for that. And we've got to understand that if we reduce these wholesale call termination rates, that they are actually going to have a positive impact in terms of reducing retail tariffs, because that's really what people are interested in, is the cost to communicate across various different technologies, with voice, data, video, whatever it is, we all want cheaper costs to communicate.
And that has happened, right, as part of this process that ECAS has been on over the last 8 years. Retail rates have come down, right?
They have come down. But what I think ECASA hasn't considered is, and this was commented on fairly extensively in, when they did this process in 2010 initially, is the so-called waterbed effect. And this is where if you reduce the rates too much and it impacts on a licensee's revenue, that they try and raise rates elsewhere to compensate for this. Now, this is it's a very careful process one has to follow, because what you're talking about is an economic intervention. You're talking about damaging certain lines or reducing certain lines of revenue, and that can work very successfully if operators have other ways of regenerating that revenue. So if you're helping grow the market by making it more competitive, if you are reducing rates in such a way that it's going to increase volumes and that that people are going to benefit and they're going to call more, then by and large that revenue gets regenerated, and operators aren't hit that hard in their bottom line, and it's a win-win situation for everyone else. However, if you go too aggressive in terms of reducing the costs, you can have a harmful impact. If you reduce the costs, call termination rates below the actual cost, there's a very real consideration that licensees might say, we're no longer deploying these types of services, or we're no longer deploying infrastructure because it's not financially feasible.
Which is exactly what Telkom is saying. They're saying the actual cost of them provisioning a call on the fixed line network is 6 cents a minute. So they therefore argue that 3 cents a minute on the fixed termination, which is what ECAS is proposing, is unsustainable, and therefore this will have a direct impact on jobs and investment in the network.
I agree with them wholeheartedly. I don't know offhand, I can't comment as to their cost, and I have to take it on good faith as to what they're saying their cost is. But I think it goes beyond that. The idea of bringing call termination rates as close to cost as possible is really to enable new entrants in the market to compete, to bring down their retail tariffs and to reduce their margin so as to create more competition and encourage retail rates to come down. So you wouldn't intervene in a market to reduce rates unless you felt that that effect was happening. Now, in the past 3 or so years, we haven't seen a significant or even a slight reduction in retail rates. If we look at the prepaid mobile rates out there, they're pretty much the same as they were 3 years ago. Telkom's retail rates in the fixed market are pretty much the same. And I dare say, but even amongst the newer competitors in the VoIP space, there was a huge level of competition from about 10 years ago up to about 3 years ago. But in the last 3 years, those rates have sort of stabilized. So what we've seen is, despite call termination rates being reduced over that period, retail rates haven't actually come down. And it seems that we have hit a threshold point now where the rates are close enough to cost that any change or any reduction in them is not going to have an impact on the retail market, and in fact could have that negative impact. And this is the risk that you run as a regulator. If you continue in a process like this and you don't relook at the markets, you just say we're going to take the market view that we took in 2010 and rerun new models, well, you run this risk that you don't actually examine things like, are retail rates coming down? Are these interventions still relevant? And if they are still relevant, do we need to continue reducing tariffs or not at all? The one thing that I find quite surprising is in the draft regulation, ECASA have actually repealed a lot of the sections where they say that there's market failure. In fact, they've changed wording to say, effectively, to prevent a recurrence of past market failure, they're regulating the tariffs. And the reason I say that's surprising is because they're reducing the call termination rates over the next 3 years. Now, if by their admission that market failure is now remedied, and all they're trying to do is prevent it from recurring, then why would they reduce those tariffs further? The other thing is that the levels of asymmetry, and this it's an important issue. I think it's one that Cell C raises quite a lot. Telkom Mobile, Telkom have raised this in respect of their mobile network recently. But it also impacts on the hundreds of small new entrants that operate in the fixed space using VoIP technology. And that level of asymmetry is a huge pro-competitive remedy as well. They haven't examined the market and the impact that that's had in recent years. So as a result, they're proposing a much higher level of asymmetry in the mobile market, in which the players are relatively established. The key beneficiaries would be Cell C and Telkom Mobile. Well, Cell C has had 20 years plus in the market, and they've had 8 years of asymmetry to try and recompense for the period prior to that, when they didn't have that benefit. And Telkom Mobile's also had a level of asymmetry. So why is it that in the mobile space they feel this is necessary, yet in the fixed space they don't? Why is it that they're reducing asymmetry to zero over the next 3 years in the fixed space, but not in the mobile? And when you look at then this combined with the change in the level of fixed subsidization of the mobile market, that is going back to the level it was in 2010, then you have to say, why is it that an operator such as Switch Telecom that has perhaps 2% of the fixed market should subsidize an operator like Cell C that has an estimated 15 to 20% of the mobile market, which is a much larger market, and that, by the way, has been operating for more than twice as many years as we have. So there seems to be a lack of attention to the finer details. It seems to be a case of trying to plug in figures to existing models without actually looking at the economics of this. Now, I fear this could be very dangerous for the market, and I fear that in the long run it's not going to help. I think it's also important to look at the benefit that licensees like Cell C have had and say, how far can you push it before they start becoming dependent on it? And this is a big risk, because they have successfully moved from being hugely loss-making into profit-making. However, if they become reliant on asymmetry to get them through that strategy, they won't become a viable and profit-making entity for the indefinite future.
That's a very good point. What about the fixed market, though? I mean, you've touched on the fact that asymmetry is... There is asymmetry in the fixed market at the moment. Do dominant operators pay smaller operators more in the fixed space? I know it happens in mobile, but is that true in fixed as well right now?
It is true in fixed, and it's a similar level. So if I look at the figures, it's quite a lot less. And in fact, if I look at the most recent figures, the asymmetry in the mobile is 6 cents a minute, and in fixed it's 2 cents a minute. Mm-hmm. So in fact, we only benefit to one third of the extent that the mobile operators do at present. It is quite interesting, because in 2010 and for the 3 years following then, although the asymmetry levels in RAN terms were different for fixed and mobile, in percentage terms they were the same, whereas in terms of the proposed tariffs they will be different both in percentage and RAN terms, and biased towards mobile operators.
It's interesting, because I mean, we all know that Vodacom and MTN are sitting at around 88 to 90% revenue market share in the mobile space, but what does the fixed line market look like? What is Telkom's revenue market share? Do we have those figures?
We don't have independent figures. However, we would estimate, based on our call origination and termination figures and how much traffic we exchange with different operators, that Telkom still has at least 80% of the fixed market. And in terms of the remainder of that, I don't believe that there's any single player that has more than 6% of that market. There are a couple of players that are leading that. I would say that of that space, Liquid Telecom, Internet Solutions, Switch Telecom, Vox, ECN, these are the names that many people know, but they are probably leading that space. And then below that, there are 100 or so in total, but probably in the region of 90 operators that have less than 1% each in the fixed space. But I think it's safe to say that Telkom probably still has at least 80% of the fixed market.
So what would you like to see happen? I mean, with these draft regulations are on the table. I presume you're going to be sending a written submission to ICASA on what you'd like to see in the market. what should be happening with termination rates? What should happen on the 1st of October when these regulations are due to come into force, both in terms of the glide path? Should there be any change, first of all, from the existing pricing? And what would you like to see happen with a symmetry, in both respects of the word? We're talking about both asymmetry between fixed and mobile, and also asymmetry between big and small and large. What would you like to see ICASA do at Switchtel?
So I believe the most important thing is that between the fixed and mobile markets, the rates should converge, and they should converge sooner rather than later. I do believe that there is still room for asymmetry for new entrants in the market, but I think a bit more care has to be placed on identifying who is a new entrant and who needs that assistance.
So would Cell C be included in that category or not?
I would say no, and the reason I say that is because they have had 8 years of asymmetry already. They have substantial market share. In 2010, in that process, ICASA said that licensees with 10% or more market share shouldn't require asymmetry. And in 2014, they simply changed that figure to 20%, which miraculously accommodated nobody other than Cell C, with no market study or research to support that. So, you know, I'm a firm believer that when you take a process like this, you need to do the research and stick to your guns. And I believe a lot of the research done in 2010 is still valid. I do believe that it should be checked again. Nonetheless, I think that things that the market committed to should be kept in place. And in 2010, there was consensus that these rates should converge. So by now, they should converge between fixed and mobile. And I think that asymmetry should be reserved, as it was in 2010, for licensees with less than 10% of a particular market. And I think that the level of asymmetry needs to be conservative. And I say that for a number of reasons. If you go too high in terms of the differential between the symmetric and asymmetric rates, you actually start creating issues with international reachabilities, bypass, grey markets, all sorts of interesting and odd situations that can actually be very harmful. And also, while I believe that new entrants need some assistance in the market, I don't believe that they need that much assistance. I ultimately believe, and I think that, you know, Cell C might argue otherwise, but this isn't just a case of coming in and trying to undercut everyone else. Yes, cost is an important aspect, but actually when we look at buyers' habits in the telecom space, value is a huge proposition. And I believe that one of the reasons Cell C hasn't gained a huge amount of market share, or as much as it would like, is because it hasn't added real value. It offers the same sorts of services as MTN and Vodacom. And reducing cost alone, it might help in price-sensitive markets like prepaid, but those aren't the huge revenue generators. In fact, the revenue generators tend to be your corporate customers, and there's less price sensitivity there. What they want is value, the ability to, for example, reverse bill, take large contracts that a company pays for on behalf of all its staff and split the billing. You know, there's so much value that we're starting to see in over-the-top services, your likes of WhatsApp and Skype, that has intruded on the traditional telephony space. And I don't think that there's been a huge amount of innovation. So, as I said, there's definitely room to provide asymmetry to small operators, but one should not take that to the level that they start relying on it and that they rest comfortably and say we don't need to innovate, because innovation is the single biggest factor that is going to cause a new entrant to gain market share.
Okay, so should the test simply be 10%? If you grow to bigger than 10% of the market, sorry, no more asymmetry, guys.
I would like to see that figure determined by economists as part of a market study. My gut feeling is that 10% is probably a rational figure, because we've had a market study before, and that was the figure that they came up with. But I do feel that if we're talking about an economic intervention that has an effect of millions or perhaps even to some extent billions of rands on licensees, that it would be better that that research is done by economists rather than me spewing a figure.
Mm. Is it feasible to set the termination rate across the market at zero?
It's a good question. I believe it can be done. I don't believe it
will. Are there any markets where it's happened that you're aware of?
Not that I am aware of. However, at caution, it's not about whether it can be done or it can't. So we can look at other markets. You know, for a long time, there wasn't a settlement regime in toll-free origination. And effectively, the toll-free origination rates were just zero there. And what happened during that time is the mobile networks refused to bill toll-free calls as toll-free to the consumer. So the risk you run is that if you go to a zero termination market, that licensees say, well, we're not complying, or there's not enough profit, or we're going to do what we like in terms of fees. Alternatively, we're going to charge astronomical monthly line rentals or fixed contract fees to compensate for that. So absolutely, there are a number of different models one can take, but one has to be aware that the licensees are businesses that have to make money, and they're going to generate their revenue somehow. If it's not from the call charges, then it might be from fixed monthly rentals.
Mm-hmm. And just looking at other models, is there an argument to be made maybe that it's only larger operators that are subjected to a set termination rate, and that perhaps smaller players in the market are free to enter into commercial negotiations and agreements with anyone else in the market and set the price based on those commercial agreements? Or does that get too complicated?
I do not encourage that. We had a model prior to 2010 where each licensee could set their own rates. It was unregulated, and there was a huge level of fraud. Particularly with the international calls to South Africa, and many, many companies were out of pocket as a result. And the impact was a lot of international carriers actually started blocking calls to South Africa, particularly to smaller licensees. They didn't try and determine which licensees were causing the trouble and which weren't. They just said, we're out of pocket, we're losing money, we're going to block calls. Now, that has a devastatingly chilling effect, because your small licensees simply cannot provide services that are usable to their customers if something like that happens. So one's got to be very careful. And the reality is that it only takes one small licensee to get greedy and do that. And it has an impact on all the licensees that are actually pricing the services fairly. So from that perspective, I'd say there has to be regulation. And ideally, it should aim to encourage or to facilitate that licensees of similar categories charge similar rates. The extent of those as to whether they're cost-based or not, another story. And there might be some scope to say that in terms of smaller licensees, that perhaps they should have some say in the quantum of that amount. However, it is quite important that it's regulated in some form, and that it's managed, that you don't have these problems that crop up where there's market failure, where numbers become unreachable internationally, and where services become unusable for customers.
So it's very clear that there's quite a bit of unhappiness in the industry about these draft regulations. Do you think ICASA is giving itself and the industry enough time? I mean, they want to implement this on the 1st of October, which is not far from today. They're still going to have, they've asked for written submissions, and they're still presumably going to have public hearings of some sort. Is this sufficient time to deal with this issue, or do you think that maybe this should be pushed out for another year?
It's not sufficient time at all, and of course I have a habit of doing this. They did a similar thing in around 2013, 2014. They didn't apply their mind at the end of the three-year glide path. They left it. Then they only started. It took another year for them to apply their minds. They published draft regulations at the last minute. And it's not fair on any player, whether even if they're going to benefit from the mounts. The reality is that there's systems changes, billing changes have to affect. There are huge commercial impacts on lots of parties. And the very least that the regulator can do is give licensees time to prepare and implement that. And in order to comply with it, they need to, you know, ICASA has a bad habit of publishing final call termination regulations days before, even after they're supposed to come into effect, and expecting operators to retrospectively apply them. It's really difficult, and to do that, it has a huge impact, especially where they're prepaid mechanisms for billing. But in terms of even draft regulations, there's a requirement in terms of promotion of access to Promotion of the Administrative Justice Act that says that a regulation or a draft regulation of this nature should have a 30 working day comment period. And they haven't provided 30 working days for comment. And this is a complex issue where licensees need to plug the figures into their business models and calculate the financial impact. They need to give feedback. And critically, we need to believe that ICASA is going to take into consideration the feedback. And it's hard to believe that if the submission deadline is 7th of September and these have to come into effect from 1st of October, that they are seriously considering any submissions that they receive in that time period. They're certainly not allowing much time to analyze the figures, to verify the submissions and if what's said is true or not, to engage. And that for me is a concern. It's a concern because it indicates that they're not following due process. And they have a reputation for this. Let's not forget that in 2014, they did not follow due process.
And they ended up in court.
And that's not my opinion. That is the opinion of the courts.
Mm. That was a bizarre judgment, wasn't it, in 2014? I mean, the court effectively found that ICASA was wrong, but they'd said this is in the public interest, so I'm going to find in favor of ICASA anyway. Something along those lines.
I think it was a no-win situation. Mm-hmm. And this is unfortunately what happens when a regulator doesn't do their job and they don't do it timelessly, they don't apply their minds to it. And I fear that we're going to have the same situation now, where the only rational solution is to postpone the implementation. By how long, I'm not sure, but I would encourage ICASA to rather voluntarily postpone it by a few months to follow due process and to really apply their minds to this, as opposed to trying to force this ahead and facing litigation and having a situation like in 2014 where the court rules that action must be postponed by anywhere from 6 months to a year. For the process to start afresh. And that is the very real risk that will happen, and it's in fact quite likely. So they really need to decide, do they want to fight this out in the courts, be found to have not followed due process yet again, and have harmful delays for everyone and all the lack of credibility that follows from that, or do they want to voluntarily admit that they've left this a bit late, extend the timelines by just a few months, and really apply their minds properly in the months between now and when it needs to come into effect?
Because in effect, they've had 3 years to deal with this, right? Or even longer, because I think the regulations were extended by a year from the last set. So 4 years since the last set of regulations. So they've had a long time to think about this and plan for it. So it seems that it may be a little inexcusable that they're publishing the draft regulations this close to their implementation when they've had so much time.
It is inexcusable, and in 2014 when they did it, the courts found it inexcusable. Hmm. So there's no other way of saying it. It is inexcusable. And what's even worse is that the draft regulations appear rushed, they appear poorly thought out, and when the result of a rush decision is that you come to a conclusion in terms of which the poor subsidize the wealthy, well, that's not just inexcusable, it's actually perverse.
I don't mean to end on a gloomy note, but if these draft regulations are implemented as they stand, what is it going to mean for retail prices that consumers pay?
I think that what we'll see is that retail tariffs will go up. And the reason I say that is that licensees will see significant loss of revenue in termination and in various other spaces, and they will seek to recover that. I think many will try and recover that in terms of international call termination rates, simply because it is the market that's less visible and that has less impact or visible impact on South Africans. However, I do think that we will also see increases in terms of line rentals, service fees, and possibly even in call origination rates, although that would probably be to a lesser extent. I think we might also see more interesting things happen with licensees like Telkom. One's got to bear in mind that Telkom can't just increase line rentals as they please. They're subject to a regulation that puts a cap on that. And this is why when they say that they might retrench a large number of staff or they might cease investment in the fixed space, that one has to take what they're saying seriously, because the first step that any licensee would do if it had freedom would be to recover that revenue through other revenue sources. But if there are other regulations that prevent that, and Telkom is subject to such regulations, then they have to look elsewhere. So I think for the smaller entrants, you will see they'll increase certain of their fees. They'll be less competitive perhaps than they were in terms of service fees and call charges, but in Telkom's case they don't have that option to do that to the full extent that they might otherwise like to, and so they're going to have to look at either retrenchments or reduced infrastructure deployment.
So your message is that in this rare instance, the set of regulations is actually bad for the industry and bad for consumers?
I would say it's a case of good intention, bad implementation. The idea is of regulating call termination tariffs, of bringing them down towards cost of pro-competitive remedies, is fundamentally a good one. It's to be welcomed, but it has to be done responsibly. There's no shortcutting it, and I think the indication here is that that ICASA have tried to cut corners with this. They have tried to shortcut it, and that's really where the harm is. I don't think it's all doom and gloom. This is a very innovative industry, and I think that we've seen that licensees will find new ways of providing value to customers, and particularly the new entrants to the market. As a smaller player, we've always maintained that you have to create new value propositions, a better service in order to win customers over. And I think that the one thing this will do is force us to say, how can we provide a better service and a more beneficial service? Because if we are backed into a corner where we have to increase our tariffs, then what we won't want to do is lose customers as a result of that. So I guess the one upside is that it will force a certain level of innovation and certainly in terms of the smaller licensees, it will force them to look at how they can create that additional value to justify any increases they need to implement and pass on to customers.
Greg Massel is CEO of Switch Telecom. This has been an absolutely fascinating discussion. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.